dbkmediaservices.com. Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the SBC Sports Talk, brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. This is show number 244. Again, all of them brought to you by Triple Crown. And they are located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, open 7 days a week, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. You'll find all the great eats there, all kinds of fun under one roof. You can look them up on the web for all kinds of great details, TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com, or just give them a call, 740-773-7529. Again, still waiting for the limousine to come pick us up till we start the show. We're just about through basketball season and hasn't happened yet. But as I bring in John Bruce here, one of the other two hosts, John, you like I think, are still waiting for that lovely limousine or party van to pull up in front of us from Triple Crown and take us off, whisk us off to the studio for another fun-filled episode. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. I might have to pass on the limousine because I might need to try to talk Shane into getting me a new phone. Dropped it in the toilet today.
So thanks for sharing that.
There's how my day is going.
Oh, okay.
So, well, it seems to be working, but I might have to pass on the limousine to try to get.
Okay.
Some new technology.
Well, with these large paychecks that we get for doing this,
right.
That, you know, I think that's just, pardon the pun, but it's just a drop in the ocean, you know, for you. So,
yeah.
Welcome in, John. And, of course, we'll bring in Mr. Shane Combs, the soothsayer of all SVC sports. Shane, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. You got the draw coming out today.
Uh-huh.
Set for some postseason, and I would think the news that had come out here a couple hours ago would make John feel a little bit better.
Yeah, that is true. It's kind of ridiculous, but we'll take it.
Yep. Well, we are headed into the postseason now, pretty much. Girls, of course, start later this week. We are recording this on the 10th of February. So it kind of gives you a time frame for where we are. And we kind of got that postseason theme here going into headlines as we start with the hoop headlines on the boys' side, end of the regular season. And so, John, what jewel of a headline do you have us for the boys as we end the regular season?
Championship Friday and Kenny Kinnick and a great set of draws for the SVU.
Okay.
So nothing super fun there, but you know, just I wanted to cover both. Zane Trace hosts Adina on Friday night for the SEC championship. Zane Trace already clinched a share, but you know they want the gold ball. Well, Adina has not got a piece of first place since the 2005-2006 season, and it all comes down on the line on Friday. So that should be really exciting. Biggest downfall in that matchup is Jarrett Garrison being injured for Adina. He was out on Friday. Anytime you lose your point guard, it'll take a toll on you. However, with Adina, they have a player like Preston Sykes who can step in there, be a really capable second ball handler. Then you have somebody like Zach Fowle, who's really turned it on the second half of the year. He's looked like the player of the year candidate that we kind of all thought he would be, especially lately. Logan Bennett, Caleb Fogelson continue to play very well. You know, Zane Trace was able to pull away in the first matchup, but I think this one will be a good bit tighter. Should be really exciting on Friday night. Then when we go to like the tournament matchups, I absolutely love the first round matchups for the SEC schools. Huntington takes on a West Union team that I watched last night. Southeastern just they borderline dominated the game. It got a little closer down the stretch, but you know, they were up 16 mm-hmm. early in the fourth quarter. And, you know, this is the Southeastern team that hadn't played real well. They just looked so much better than that West Union team. So I like that first round matchup for Huntington.
Okay.
Piketon plays Lynchburg Clay, who's really struggled down the stretch. That's a great first round matchup for them. Bay Valley gets a second shot at Lucasville. I know they lost the first time, but, you know, a second time seeing them on a neutral floor could be a good matchup for them. Southeastern's got a tougher one with North Adams, but if they play like they did on Saturday, they look like the team that we kind of expected them to be. Not maybe not top end of the league, but still very competitive, good energy, just a good team. Now, Shane kind of mentioned it, UDO to get in the sixth seed and avoiding Jackson, Zane Trace is absolutely amazing, and only having to win one game to get to the combo. Now, Washington Courthouse is a really good team still. Mm-hmm. They beat Chillicothe earlier in the season. Washington Courthouse beat Uniota by 5 earlier this week. Really close, tight game. But, man, that's a great, great seed for Uniota. Then, of course, Adina and Zay Trace getting the one seeds. They've done everything this season to earn those one seeds. And, you know, it's awesome for the league to be able to get two different number one seeds.
Yeah.
So it's I feel like today was an exciting day for the SVC.
Besides dropping your phone in the toilet. Yeah,
exactly.
That's right.
I mean,
Okay. Shane, what about your headline for the boys' side?
Well, I was just so excited when I ended up seeing the draw results for the league that I kind of had to change a little bit, if I'm being honest, because I got home a little later this afternoon. I already had my notes done for the show.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to go with a golden opportunity for more than just Zane Trace.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel like I, right here on the fly, I need to change it. Like maybe it's basketball 30. So let's go to the starting lineups.
Please.
You know, combo Bam all around. I mean, I was just trying to come up with them right here on the fly. Like, I honestly here in the last hour, like looked back at my computer 3 or 4 times to make sure I was seeing it correctly. I mean, like, I don't want to make too much of it. These are incredible draws.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain matchups that we just weren't going to win. And I thought for sure that's where we would head. And the funny thing in the D2, and I don't want to make too much of this, but I always try to give an honest response on SVC Sports Talk here. After knowing the Washington Courthouse road over the last 7 to 10 days, mm-hmm. them and the Southeastern, because if I'm not mistaken, help me here, John, because I don't have the D2 bracket in front of me. McLean and Waverly are in the Southeastern vote, right?
Yes.
Courthouse is seated ahead of them, right?
Yes.
I mean, that was my reaction an hour ago too, because again, and understand, Courthouse team, I just watched them on film here about a week ago. Very, very good basketball team. I just watched them, very good basketball team, but I also at the end of that film understand how that game ended was a little bit unfortunate. And that just McLean and Waverly are two matchups that I think would have been very, very difficult for some of our SVC teams. So to avoid that, that's incredible. And then John did an awesome job of running down through the D3 brackets. Again, even teams into the middle and bottom of our league with incredible opportunities, not only to win a game, but to maybe even get out and go to the combo themselves. So we'll talk about it a little bit deeper next week when it comes more time for the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing, John, I will throw in there before Coach Bradley absolutely is throwing something at his computer telling you to wait is they do go to Huntington Tuesday night. So Adina has to go and play a Huntington team that's starting to catch fire here late in the year. That's Tuesday night at Huntington. So that's an obstacle they have to get past to set up that Friday night. That is the reschedule from a couple Fridays ago there. And so that's why the standings read the way they do. But no, in all seriousness here, guys, on the headline, that golden opportunity for Zane Trace is obviously there. It's also a golden opportunity for Adina. But then both of those teams have outstanding draws. And then, honestly, there's really not a team in the SVC that doesn't have reason for some optimism, as you say, John, at least into the first round, and then having a chance to play for a chance. You know, all these teams are going to end up in opportunities to play a game that's winnable, or maybe you're going to play a team that has been beaten by the SVC, and maybe you've beaten some teams in the SVC. Some of those back and forth things that we do as coaches when we're trying to give some confidence to our kids and so forth. So really, really excited for the boys league, Bruce, in terms of the way that this ended up coming out today.
Ended up pretty well for the SVC. Well, there's our hoop headlines for the boys' side. Now, reminder that this portion of our program brought to you by North Fork Animal Clinic at 2260 Anderson Station Road, where they care. You know, they feel that a good veterinarian and a good veterinary practice must know each and every animal that's being treated and the temperament of each of your pets. So they have likes and dislikes just as people do, and their practice at North Fork Animal Clinic is limited to small animals, so they get to know everything about their patients. They treat them just like family, just the way their owners would want them to be treated. Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff at North Fork Animal Clinic, 773-7387. Give them a call. It's where we care. We move on to the girls' hoop headline side, and we're going to switch things up. We're going to go with Shane first here. Shane, if you can give us your hoop headlines for the girls' side of things.
Girls side, much more basic, John, because I feel like that's what tournament time is. I'm just going to go with a now or never. Yeah, a lot of teams that have been working for this particular thing now for several weeks. Obviously, on the girls side, we've had a dominant team at the top, so there hasn't been a whole lot of question about who's going to win the league now for about 3 months. Sure, you're trying to jockey for some spots in the standings, you know, finish third, finish fifth, finish seventh, whatever it might be. But I think everyone's been focused on this particular week, getting ready. Girls' side's a little bit more difficult. We highlighted that last week. Matchups are a little tougher. It's just the level of girls' basketball right now in the area compared to what we're playing in our league. But opportunities do present themselves for our league to, not just this year, but as I talked about last week, start to get some respect for our league, start to get some respect in terms of how our conference is viewed around the area. And I think we can do that. You love Uniota's spot there at the top to start a run and go from there. And then each team down the way, you'll see how the matchups go. But, you know, Huntington's always a dangerous team with the talent they have. Westfall's ability to score, if they start shooting it well one night, they can beat anybody. Python's a team that's so well coached. Southeastern's a team that's so well coached in terms of the toughness and the pace and tempo they play. Paint Valley, we play a really talented Manchester team who just beat the 2 seed the other night. A lot of people feel like Manchester Paint Valley could be more of a district semifinal type of matchup, but where the overall records fall kind of puts them in a 4-5 matchup in the sectional final. And then, you know, excited to see Adina on that stage as they go. The way they've improved in that first round game, obviously have a very tough opponent. And then, you know, Zane Trace, obviously, they've struggled throughout the year, but with everybody back, John, I think you and I agree that getting in these types of atmospheres and going through these experiences is just part of that process that you know, moves forward in the next year or two. So excited time. Went a lot more basic there, Bruce, with a now or never, because I think in the tournament, you know, you show up and figure it out, or you move on to spring.
Exactly. John, what about your hoop headlines for the girls' side?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I think with the tough tournament draws, the Titans and tough SVC will make it to where those teams will not be phased. So I just went tough tournament draws will not phase SVC squads. I mean, obviously you're playing, they're tough situations, tough matchups for a lot of our teams, but the non-league schedule have been really tough. The league has been so kind of filled with parity that a lot of teams have had success against teams that maybe they didn't expect to early in the season. So I think teams can go into these first round matchups with confidence. We'll see how it kind of turns out, but You know, I really like that West Falls won 5 straight. Really have gotten going near the end of the year to finish third and 13-9 overall. I feel like they were like 3-7 at one point. Is that close, Shane?
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, to get to 13-9, and those two losses would have been to Union and Huntington. I mean, that's a really great turnaround for Coach Blue. Union has won 12 straight going into the tournament. Arguably four of the top 10 players in the SEC. Any of
good win for them on Saturday.
Yeah. And Josie Fisher was in foul trouble all night. So a kid like Chris Dolly scores the game winning basket as someone who is kind of their fourth option. She goes their first option, scores in the post against a really good post defender. And then they hold on defensively. Now, a name to look out for is Avery Miller. She played JV pretty much the entire year for Uniota. She got some spot minutes here or there. She did a good job off the bench against Southeastern with the unfortunate Riley Davis injury. And gave him big minutes then. In the fourth quarter, when Fisher picked up a fourth foul, she comes in off the bench and gives them huge minutes. She probably played 6 of the 8 minutes in the fourth quarter after playing only in the JV game. Right. And that's going to be someone in the future, and especially for the end of this year, as they had to find someone that can play inside outside like Riley Davis did to give them big minutes. So I think that's somebody that will be a key for them to make a little bit of a run.
Well, she's a very talented kid. I mentioned earlier in the year when we talked to freshman class, we have so many kids in the freshman class, and that's just the example of Uniota kind of with the wait your turn.
Yep.
Or as one person told me this week, I was really feeling sorry for Jeff there that he may not have enough, you know, offensive talent. Yeah. But no, in all seriousness, she's terrific. She's a very talented kid. Good basketball IQ too.
Yes.
All right, gentlemen, that's our hoops headlines. We got to move along. Up next, we take an email from a listener who recalls one of our older segments on SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk rolls on, episode 244, as we wind down the basketball season. This segment coming up here, brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club, 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. And telephone number there, 740-986-4653. Look them up on the web, crownhillgolfclub.com. Remember, their winter savings sale is running out of time for you to react. It's done on February the 14th, so depending on when you're listening to this, it may be in the rearview mirror. They can customize a membership to fit your schedule. Again, call them at 740-986-4653 for a limited time. You can take 10% off of any yearly membership. All memberships are valid for one calendar year. Remember, gift cards are available for purchase, and they can be purchased online, or just give them a call, as I said. It's Crown Hill Golf Club. Appreciate their support. Well, guys, as I kind of teased there in the break, or before we went to the break, we had an email from somebody who's obviously been listening for quite a few years, Shane, because yep. they're citing the back to the liar, Stripes on Fire segments that we used to do when Jeremy Ward was with us. And obviously they like that. Let me get into the email, and I'll kind of stop at different points in it and ask you guys' opinion about this. It says, I enjoyed the show on the new moves. I think we're talking about the Euro steps and so forth that we talked about 3 weeks ago. It's made me look more for the spin and other offensive moves or calls. It got me thinking about the older liar segment you guys did in the past on officials. And I had some calls or rules that I thought would be good discussion points, and we appreciate this input from the email. The first one being the old intentional foul. Shane, I'll let you just kind of dive into this.
Well, I should probably know the rule book or the terminology a little bit better than than I do in terms of, you know, when I see the intentional foul. I guess my opinion on this, John, is there shouldn't really be such a thing in basketball. To me, you should be allowed to foul intentionally whenever you want. I mean, think about it. We do it at the end of the game, mm-hmm. if we're behind. Mm-hmm. We stop the clock. We do it even more than we would have to if we had a shot clock. Sometimes a guy is driving to the hole and we give a hard foul to not give a layup, but we send him to the line for two. And to me, there's penalties in place. The penalties we have, obviously you have your five fouls and you're out. I mean, that's an obvious rule. We have our bonus situation. As we've documented on SVC Sports Talk, we even have the severe double bonus, that I love so much. But to me, the intentional foul is really irrelevant. To me, you should be able to foul whenever you want, knowing the penalties that come with it. Now, what really needs to make sure that we understand here is the flagrant foul mm-hmm. is what needs to be in place. The flagrant foul is the one that obviously does not give you the right to injure someone or hurt someone or to forcefully foul them in a way. I guess when I hear the term intentional foul, I don't really buy it. I mean, there's always times that in basketball, as I've just stated, that we do foul on purpose. And as long as you know the penalties and are willing to play through those penalties, then that's your right to use it as a strategy.
Any thoughts there, John?
Yeah, I would just like to have it change from an intentional foul to a flagrant, like it is in college at this point. Because, I mean, like Shane said, end of the game, you are trying to intentionally foul someone. So if it clearly is intentional when you do it, mm-hmm. you know, that's why I would like the change of the name, because I mean, flagrant foul is like the two hand shoves when someone's going up for a layup.
Yeah.
Kind of undercutting someone going up for a dunk to try to, you know, you're not trying to hurt them, but usually someone gets hurt whenever someone tries to dunk and they're like, oh, I'm not going to let them dunk. This is 1980. Get out, don't try to hurt people.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, so I mean, it's, it is what it is, but I would like to see just the name of it change, because like Shane said, it is irrelevant, because if you're down four at the end of the game, you're intentionally fouling.
Right.
So I mean,
okay. The second point that this person would like to kind of have you discuss is the ball handler carrying or palming the ball.
Yeah, to me, guys, this is something at the point guard position you try to really watch. You know, certain kids get in bad habits where they get that hand to the side or particularly under mm-hmm. The ball. I think a lot of it comes from we live in a generation when you kind of watch you know, at the NBA level, or you watch some of the different things that are out there with the ball handling things, that the fancier the better, right? Mm-hmm. So we have a tendency to get that thing off to the side there, in there, get a little pause, get, you know, gotta get the killer crossover and all those things. And I think that's where it comes from. I think the biggest thing here is the lower you dribble, the more you're going to get away with it. And I think that if I'm being, I don't know another way to say it, if you're a really good ball handler, you're going to get away with it. A lot of times if you've kind of proved to the official throughout the night that you're keeping the ball down and that you're really good with the ball, you probably get a little bit more leeway. I mean, John, I don't know if you agree with that. I think that if kids are kind of fumbling the ball or they're not as pure or smooth with the ball, that a lot of times some of these different things just look different. I don't know that sometimes the official sees a carrier a palming. It just looks like it is, or it just looks bad. So to me, those are probably the two things, Bruce, I'd throw out. How low do you handle it? And then how well do you handle it throughout the course of a game?
You know, now that, go ahead, John.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just thinking, Shane, you just expressed a thought there that I've had a couple times watching different games. If the ball handler is very smooth otherwise, they can get away with a lot more than if it's, you know, someone that would be in my genre, which would be, you know, fumbling all over the place. If I spin my hand over on top of the mm-hmm. ball from the bottom, I'm going to get that call on me. But there are certain very gifted individuals who have, if you watch them closely, they do have that spin almost on the ball, and they get away with it.
I think that's true, John, because I look at it as a lot of times the poor ball handling, as I've talked about on the show here, leads to some of the physicality and leads to some of the difficulties in officiating when it comes to fouling. So I think all calls a lot of times are based on the ability to handle the ball. And then the other thing, John, and I'd love to get your thought on this within your answer too. One of the annoying things is if a kid's dribbling a certain way for like 2.5 quarters, and then all of a sudden in the third quarter, it's called, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's one of those where, again, I think sometimes I don't know that they actually see, oh, right there was the carry, as much as it just looked bad and the crowd reacted and so forth.
Yeah. I'm this is going to be, you know, maybe ball handler, point guard bias, but if a defender can put 1 to 2 hand ball handler or a forearm on them, guide them wherever they want, why can't you carry the ball? Like, you're not running with it. So I don't care if a ball handler does carry it. I know it doesn't look great, but if we're letting the defense have such an advantage, which is a big reason why you're seeing these games in the low 40s scoring wise and kind of can be ugly at times, if we're just going to give the defender an advantage, then why can't the ball handler have a little advantage? Yeah, you can't bring it up over top, like you can't literally carry it, but I just think there has to be something done if people are going to say something about the palming. If the defender can just, if I can put 2 hands on somebody. Now, you hear it, like I hear it all the time, like when I'm out at these games, just, oh, he's carrying, or like you said, Shane, whenever it looks bad, the whole crowd's just, oh, and then, oh, there's a carry call.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to look bad, or it doesn't have to have been carried. It just might not look great. And I actually had a kid carry the other night that I'm not sure was, but he looked at me. I go, it looked bad. Like, I don't know if it was or not, but I was just like, go down the court. You know, it looked bad. So
that's a fascinating point, Bruce, because if you think about it, and again, I love teaching the game and different things. I've talked about it, and I thought about it even this week some. You know, I'm really close to just going with the new spin move and just going with it. I think what John talks about, the reactionary calls, are fascinating to me because you get all the hand checking, but think about it. As soon as a point guard extends their off arm, it's a foul. We let teams just absolutely beat the defensive rebounder to death after the defensive rebound, and then as soon as a kid clears through and pivots, oh, it's dangerous, can't throw the elbow. I mean, it is. So there is a lot of reactionary stuff that goes from some of these topics. That's really interesting how these topics kind of lead you into different things as well. That's good stuff.
Yep. Our third point in this email, and the final one here, is high school interpretation of continuation. You know, just like the just like LeBron and his boys do.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like I'm repeating myself here a little bit, but I think I'm being honest. I think, again, it depends on how good you are. I think sometimes your smoothness in terms of the way you can get it going in one motion, you know, in terms of sometimes, John, kids aren't as skilled. I think they really are trying to shoot, and it just looks like a good basketball player can't shoot from that position or that, you know, that control of the ball. But I will say, I don't know if I should say that, but like I do think there's nights, I don't know the right way to say it. I think there's some nights where if you are officiating, and maybe I'm not even saying anything bad here. I mean, look, I'm a fan. I go watch. I enjoy watching a great player play. If I'm coaching, you know, maybe I don't enjoy watching it from the bench as much, but at the end of the night, I can sit and watch a film and be like, oh, wow, that was a really good move. That was good stuff. I do think there's times officials are basketball, right? I mean, I assume they like the game. Yeah. They're officiating. I think some nights they get a little starstruck maybe. And that might be an unfair term, but I mean, I think they enjoy a player's game. I think they enjoy watching a game. And So it probably does depend on how smooth or how good you are at something. You probably can sell it a little bit more, or you probably get an extra half step after the whistle or that type of thing. But yeah, gosh, I think officiating has such difficult calls that they have to make in a matter of about a half second. I think that's fair, John, in terms of how good you are can dictate a lot of these little benefits that you get on the whistle.
Yeah, I think smoothness does have a lot to do with continuation, because, you know, if it looks clunky, more than likely they're going to say, oh, well, he knew the foul was coming, so he's just trying to throw up a shot. But, you know, if you look smooth, usually the better players do look smoother on it. So I think that is a big thing to look for. I don't know how I feel about the continuation, because it's so hard to call. And I think at this point, like, you know, Bruce, you brought up the NBA guys.
Yeah.
At this point in the NBA, they're just kind of like, whatever, we want scoring. So if you make a basket, they're going to give it to you. You might've got fouled at the 3-point line, but hey, you're coming up to shoot a layup or dunk. So I just think, you know, I think at that level, it's a little easier to call a continuation. I think it's just so hard to call it at the high school level with the varying amounts or varying degrees of skill level that, it's a hard rule to call.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be an official right now, because it's just, if the game's faster, kids are getting bigger and faster, and people are so angry now that it just seems like it might not be worth the money to do it.
John, do you find yourself in all these discussions coming back to the common theme of skill level with physicality, mm-hmm. with the foul rules in place? Do you kind of see talking about? It seems like I get back to that inner circle mm-hmm. almost on everything we talk about when it comes to breaking down the rules or the different things of the game. Is that fair?
Yes, I believe so. I
just thinking there, Shane, we were, you know, we touched early in the year on, you know, the ref shortage and so forth. And there we, John just pretty much said it's not worth the money. So I think back then I was a proponent of follow the money. And I think that's part of it. It's just too mean an atmosphere anymore, or getting meaner all the time and so forth. So
yeah. Now, I'll say this: if I do stop coaching, I'm sure I'd probably actually go into it, but just to stay close to the game. But it's just right now, it's just like, yeah.
Don't know if it would be worth it. All right, guys, our inbox email there that we wanted to feature, and we certainly do appreciate the person who wrote in, and we'll tell you in a little bit how you can too write in and leave us some comments, maybe also offer some topics for us to discuss and so forth, and that'll come up a little bit later in the show. But right now, we're going to go to this week's feature segment, as Shane will select his annual website, Girls Basketball All-League Squad. This segment, too, brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give Kevin and the guys a call up at 740-986-4653, Crown Hill Golf Club. Find them on the web at crownhillgolfclub.com. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier, they have a sale which ends on February the 14th. You better get in there and let them know what you're looking for, and they can probably customize a membership to fit your schedule. For a limited time, you can take 10% off of annual yearly memberships, and all those memberships are valid for one calendar year. Seniors and veterans, by the way, get 15% off, and they always have gift cards available if you happen to have a birthday or whatnot. Valentine's Day coming up as well. You can get that golfer in your family something for Valentine's Day. You know, ship them off to the golf club. That's what you want. CrownHillGolfClub.com/club/store. and we do appreciate them. 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport, Crown Hill Golf Club. We do so appreciate that. Well, Shane, this is one of the things that a lot of people are interested in, I'm sure. Your annual look at the girls basketball all-league squad, as stated by celebrities like yourself on SVC Sports Talk. And I'm just going to let you kind of summarize how you approach this.
All right, guys, I say it every year. You know, we've been, 8 years now on SVC Sports Talk. And even before then, I used to do it on the website. So for the last decade, been trying to name boys teams and girls teams and volleyball teams and so forth. And as I say, each time I do it, it's something I take extremely serious. I think people have to understand that a lot of times you get three different people that really know the game in the room, and you start doing things, you're probably going to agree 70-80% of them. There's not a lot of surprises, but you're always going to have 2-3 kids that, you know, you just see differently. Maybe you watched them play some particular nights where they struggled or particular nights where they played really well. We have a league standings this year that's really weird in terms of all league selections, because let's face it, Uniota and Huntington have proven to be a lot better than everybody else at basketball, right? I mean, in terms of 14-0, 12-2, 3-7's literally been a couple of seconds, a couple of calls, a couple of shots, you know, certain shots, you know, with less than 30 seconds to go, going in or not going in being the difference in a game that could persuade standings anywhere from third to sixth or even seventh place, maybe at times. What I am going to do a little bit differently, guys, you've heard me do this before in the situations that I coach. I think it's unfair of me, from a subjective standpoint, to rank the Paint Valley kids with me helping them this year. So I will be naming my particular teams without the Paint Valley kids in there, John. But okay. In fairness to the young ladies that I have the privilege of coaching, I certainly don't want to cheat them the exposure on SVC Sports Talk. So I will say up front that – and by the way, Bruce, I do not know the official list. You hear me say that every year. I purposely avoid contact with that list so that I don't know that, so that I know actually Coach Norman sent me the list a few hours ago, and I purposely did not open it because I never want to see it. I'll look at it here after our show tonight. But I like to do this to where I don't feel like I'm being persuaded in other directions. But I'm assuming that a kid like Leah McFadden – I will be honored in some way by the coaches, and rightfully so. She's a terrific young lady that represents everything you'd want to represent in a program. Great role model for young kids to follow her work ethic, the way she watches film, the way she practices, the way she genuinely leads. And when I say genuinely, I mean like she genuinely is happy for a teammate that plays well. She's genuinely concerned for a teammate going through a tough time. Just a great kid. I would say probably as tight as the 3-7 standings and Paint Valley's ability to be in that mix all year, I would think they'll get a second kid. I would think a Kelsey Dunn would be honored somewhere in that top 15. Kelsey's a kid that points, rebounds, blocks, has been consistently in the mix. Had some really big games early in the year when, in the eyes of some people, Paint Valley maybe overachieved a little bit. Kelsey certainly had a lot to do with that, with some big performances. And then honorable mention that we'll get to later on, Paint Valley's got a lot of young kids. Livia Smith and Abby Stanforth, I think, would probably be your most consistent choices. I know some coaches have been high on the Urich sisters, and that's kind of a weird situation, John, because Bailey, the first half of the year when Paint Valley was playing really well, was top 10 3-point shooter. She gets hurt right around the time her sister Hannah comes up to varsity, and Paint Valley starts that third freshman. And Hannah's been awfully dominant here the last 2-3 weeks. So just some kids that I thought – as you know how I think out loud in these, Bruce, over the years when you've heard me do them, even though I'm going to leave them out, I thought it would be unfair of me just to keep exposure just because I'm their coach. So I thought I would go ahead, and I appreciate the opportunity to get a chance to throw them on there.
All right. We'll start with the coach of the year, Shane.
All right. Well, at the coach of the year, I'll go as quickly as possible because I do like the opportunity as a coach myself, as you guys know. always like to go. Jeff Miller is going to be my coach of the year. Uniote, I believe, at 21 straight SVC games. You know, I think a lot of people, John, will say that, you know, they were the favorite. But, I mean, when you're the favorite and you got to win the league by like 30 points a night, I think that you're kind of doing what you're supposed to do, right? So, I mean, their physicality, this is a team that's a much, much better team than last year, in my opinion, John. I know we had that debate earlier in the year. And where they are better, and I shouldn't say they're better in all aspects, but where they are better for sure is they are tournament tough and tournament ready because of how they defend. Because of how they defend and rebound and the D2 level when it comes down to the half court game and the physicality that you know you're going to get with those levels, I think Coach Miller and his staff deserve a lot of credit for that. I want to give a shout out with Coach Daly there, Zane Trace, continuing to work a process, and you know, Richard Scott there to Dina. The point that I would make, like take a look at the job that like a Tiffany Carroll's doing in Huntington. And then going back to Coach Snyder, and now, you know, now with Tiffany Carroll, I think Huntington just won their 15th straight game for, I think it's 4 years in a row. So, like, if you look at what Zane Trace is doing, what Adina is actually, you know, obviously way ahead in doing, they're having the opportunity to use, like, Huntington as an example. Well, Huntington's only about 5 years removed from about a 44-game losing streak, maybe 6 years removed from a really bad losing streak themselves. So I think that serves, and I think they have some coaches there doing a great job, the same as Tiffany's doing there at Huntington. Obviously, Coach Adams, Coach Carino, the longevity and the consistency they bring, do an outstanding job. Coach Blue now have been at Westfall, just a super, super job this year. You highlighted that, John, a second ago with the the way they stayed the course. And then I certainly am not going to leave out Tristan Norman, who I've had the privilege of coaching with this year. She's had a lot on her plate, to say the least, this year, and in the way she has brought consistency and toughness. I'll tell you one thing Jeff Miller didn't do this year, John, win a game on Thursday night, give birth to a kid over the weekend, and then win another game the following Thursday night. Didn't miss any time. I mean, you couldn't get her to go away. You're like, Tristan, you might want to say, nah, I'll be there. You know, I mean, just I was joking.
Sure, that's where you're going on that one. I was like, I don't think Jeff's done that.
So, you know, no, I mean, listen, she comes in as a first year coach last year. Had a chance to finish second or third in the league, and you lose or third in the league last year, and then you lose Lexi Woods. That's tough on any coach, especially a first year coach. Comes back this year, has a schedule where you only play two D4 games, they win six SVC games there at Payne Valley this year, and that's only been done like three times in the last 23 years in the league. So it's certainly moving in the right direction. Starting three freshmen there at the end gives you a lot of excitement for the future as well. So just wanted to highlight each of those coaches, even though it takes more time, Bruce, because I just think it's just kind of my duty to do so, to give a shout out to each of them. But again, as my coach of the year, I'll go with Jeff there at Uniota for sure. And, my question to you, John, on this would be, how do you think in the coach of the year situation that someone's preseason predictions can influence this award? Because, you know, when I look back to last summer, we'll do our Jeremy Ward special next week. There's another Jeremy reference for you, Bruce.
Yeah.
He hates it where I look a year ahead and start to, you have your predictions early in the year, and then you have them again over the summer and then the preseason and so forth. And doesn't that dictate, John, how you kind of view the job that you think a coach or a program does in terms of expectations?
Yeah, I mean, really, because I mean, we pretty much all expected Uniota to win the league. But does that mean that Miller shouldn't get coach of the year? And I think we need to be careful on that with the preseason predictions. Because let's say, like, we'll use Tristan Norman from last year. Like you said, you have arguably top 10, 15 player all time in the league go down with an injury and misses most of the year. Like, how does, like, that shouldn't shape how you thought her first year went. And it's just, I think with the preseason predictions, it can really, it shouldn't dictate how this award's voted on, to me. Now it's, if you want to go somewhere else on it, I would understand any arguments on it. I just think that you kind of have to be careful on it, because I feel like there have been years in the past where maybe we gave Coach of the Year to someone who was expected to win the league and maybe they stumbled. So I just think it's there's you know, you had to be careful with the predictions because it really shouldn't matter to who wins the awards, because just because, you know, Braden Collins or Jesse Fisher has a great year and they're predicted to do it doesn't mean that they shouldn't be player of the year just because somebody else might have had a great year too. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, I think with preseason predictions, it has to be careful because he knows. I mean, obviously us three know, but I mean, you know. Yeah.
Sometimes we don't know.
Yeah.
Well, it depends who you ask.
Yeah.
That's right. If we ask us, we'll know. Anyway, yeah. Let's move along then to the POY, the Player of the Year, Shane. What you got on that?
Well, I think, guys, basically what happens here is you have three different realistic opportunities to highlight a kid. There's three kids that are up for this award. I think, you know, the two Huntington kids there with Basie and Collins, as well as Uniotis Fisher, as John just said, I don't think you'll get a whole lot of debate from anybody. In terms of those three, I think the debate then comes in terms of looking at you've got a kid that is incredible longevity in production. You have a kid that is incredibly efficient in winning. And then you just have a freakish talent that is really, really special in terms – and that's how you're trying to sort them out. So I don't think you'll go wrong with any of these kids. And, you know, I mentioned the Painted Valley situation earlier, guys. I'm the first to admit that I'm going to be a little bit Huntington biased here because I coached Braden, had an opportunity to work with Allison in camps and in individual workouts before leaving that program when Coach Snyder moved over to the boys. So I certainly hope I am no way cheating Josie in this aspect. I'm just trying to give an honest opinion, and I'm sure that I'm biased, and we'll see how the coaches voted. But I'm going to go with Braden Collins as my Player of the Year. I just think it's a kid that is going to push 1,600 points here in this next week. Does it not only scoring the ball at more than 7 or 8 points per game more than the next kid, but also does it with, you know, steals and defense and different things. It's a kid that doesn't really require a lot of X's and O's be run for her. She kind of just gets it in the flow of the game, John. I think is what always impresses me. Mm-hmm. On both ends. And then with the appreciation of the efficiency and winning, I put Fisher in that two hole. I still can't get over the 74%. That's a number that when I was putting stats on last night, I kept going back to Max Preps and like looking at that number again and making sure that I was looking at it correctly. Like it's unreal. Just the efficiency and the ability. But more than that, I think what impresses me the most as a coach, I think I said this about a month ago on SEC Sports Talk, is her ability to allow them to evolve on the defensive end. You know, you don't have to change anything for her in terms of what you want to do defensively. She can guard the athletic post, the big post. She can front the post. She can hedge on the ball screen. She can rebound. She can sprint the court and run with the rim runner. Just a really, really special kid. And realistically could have been Player of the Year in volleyball as well. I know that the district level she was, and I certainly, if the announcement came back that she was Player of the Year, I certainly wouldn't have a problem with that. She's a great, great player just for my list here on SVC Sports Talk. And again, as I say every year, for whatever that means, I'm just a fat guy on a podcast telling you who I think ranks where. I'll go Collins, Fisher, and then Basie in the three spot. John, this kid's special.
Oh, yeah.
She's really, really good. I mean, I hope our fans and people watching her understand her skill set at her size and her athleticism are unreal. I made the comment the other night that she's almost the pure skill set of Crystal Tharp and the athleticism of Ella Skeens, like all in one. Like she's that good. You know, we talked about the ability to score. She's still a little raw in some of those areas, but she has parts of all of those skill sets. So, I mean, you know, the good Lord blesses her with health the next 3 years. The sky's the limit for her. And I'll go ahead, Bruce, and put her in that three spot. So I guess I've already named those those three before I come back to you, Bruce, to have you go to the next thing. I think the question I would ask for John here, just in terms of philosophy to add to the discussion for our fans, John, I don't know. When you have a career, you have winning versus efficiency, you have talent, skill set. How are you sorting all those things out? I'm not even asking you to necessarily name your order or name a player of the year or anything like that. I'm just asking you a question in terms of all of those things are pretty important, aren't they?
Oh, extremely important. And I mean, maybe you look at Bases youth and maybe that's how you sort it on that. It's just, you know, there's a real good chance she's going to win it three times after this year. Because you're right. I mean, the first time I saw her was in the preview. And it was the first play of the previews, and she just did – it was just a move she made on the wing, and I just went, oh, my.
Yes.
It was just like, oh, this is
– I actually had a front seat for that exact move.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because – and I whispered to Coach Holbert to my right. I was like, I've been watching basketball the last 2 hours, and no one else in the gym could do what she just did right there.
It was just like – you could just see that talent and I think we've voted that before for a player of the year over winning efficiency at one point. So I think it wouldn't be out of this world to do that. I just think, to me, with Josie Fisher, and I'm fine with Collins getting player of the year or you voting her, if the coaches voted her player of the year, because she's had a great career and just does all kinds of little things. But Josie Fisher is like, she doesn't need the ball to impact the game. And she's getting doubled by a lot of teams and the offense that you're looking for. I mean, like you said, she's shooting 74%. She's going to finish like 100 shots short of what the OHSA record is for percentage of the year, like to qualify.
Wow.
She would destroy the all-time state record for field goal percentage, and she's just such a like quiet, solid player that, you know, she is a winning player, a very efficient player. She gets a couple or one or two blocks a game, gets a couple steals a game, rebounds, scores when she gets the ball. I mean, I'm okay with her not getting the award, but you know, obviously that would, to me, would mean there had to be four on the first couple teams to me. But she's someone that you might look at the juniors you knew that has coming back, young talent, but it's going to be like, oh, they're missing. That's a big piece they're going to miss because she's so efficient. And she's a winning player in everything she does. Now, and then like you said, career, I mean, Braden Collins has just been unbelievable for 3 years, and it's just, you know, it's hard for me to say that one of them wouldn't deserve it. I would have been okay with any of the three getting player of the year because they're all outstanding players. And it's just, I don't know how you sort it out. Cause I know that was the question.
Basically, you don't know the answer. Yeah.
No, I don't know the answer because they're all extremely important aspects to winning games and to being a player. So sorry I talked for so long without actually answering the question.
Bruce, I mean, I know you've had a chance to sit front row and watch a lot of special players over the year. Don't you think sometimes what happens is when you're talking about a really talented player, especially a really consistent player, you almost just take it for granted? I mean, you just kind of show up and be like, oh, someone had 25 tonight or someone's had 20 tonight. You know, don't you think there's something to that in terms of we almost forget to appreciate it after a while?
Yep. Over time, you kind of know that person is going to get, you know, in double figures, does it every night. And then, you know, when he or she gets 9, it's not a double. So, yeah, I think exactly what you're saying is they sort of build an expectation throughout their career, and if they don't live up to that expectation, even though that expectation is so far head and shoulders above everybody else, then you know, not performing near as well. So they may be more talented, but that expectation plays against the talent. And
I think that's well said. Yeah, I just think that Collins is a kid that, you know, I just love her work ethic. I love the way she goes about it. And then, like I said, you have to appreciate the efficiency and the winning of Fisher, and then just the pure, just young talent and still high, you know, ceiling and potential of Basie. So I think I would be shocked if anyone disagrees on those first three, and that's the way we'll start the list.
Well, why don't you continue your list, having done pretty much the first three there, with the remainder of the first team, and then go on into your second team.
Okay, yeah, sure. So just go ahead and with the next seven kids then, basically. Yep. On the rest of the first team, I'll be honest, guys, the fourth spot was just as automatic for me. I just didn't maybe go as far there because, as Bruce was saying, I was just talking kind of player of the year. But in terms of first team, John, I think the fourth spot of Emily Coleman is a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. You're talking about a kid that has been terrific for the most dominant team in the league. You know how much we love guard play and how much guard play sets the tone. Well, there's a reason for that, you know, in terms of how good Uniota is. And, you know, she's a kid that has the ball in her hand a lot. She doesn't turn it over a lot. She's high assist. She's scoring the basketball better. She's shooting it better than ever in her career. The more she started to knock down the perimeter shot, it really made you start to, you know, ask yourself, well, what in the world do you even do with them? You know what I mean? In terms of the second half of the year. To me, that's a no-brainer. Now, where I really got in a pickle was this last spot on first team, because I'm going to be honest, guys. I was really, really close to putting Amber Cottrell there and just going an all Uniota Huntington first team, which I think I'd have been justified in doing at 14-0, 12-2. But you get to this group of kids that you get into this Macy Graves, Marcy Dudge, and Grace Lytle situation where it's really tough to separate them a little bit in terms of what you do. So for me, when I looked down my list, I ended up coming back to this, and I'll explain that maybe a little bit later. I'm going to go Macy Graves here at the end of the first team. To me, Graves, in terms of the situation she was in at Southeastern there, some young kids that came on as the year went on. They lose Skylar Heiss early in the year. A lot more is put on her. I just really, really liked this kid's game the first time I watched her there at the preview. And then I watched her, you know, two or three times leading up to the first time I coached against her. Then I watched her another time leading up to the second time. And she was just a completely different player the second half of the year, John. A kid that shoots it from deep, kid that shoots it off the drive, kid that posts you up. She started to rebound it. You look at her three-point shooting and her free throws, she's as good a just pure shooter as we have in our entire conference, boy or girl. And when you ask maybe what she was able to shoulder a little bit compared to maybe what Amber or Marcy or Grace might have had to in terms of the balance of their teams, Southeastern certainly had some really quality athletes and defenders. Had another young scorer that pushed double figures in Huff, which I'll talk about here in a little bit. But to me, that was one of my toughest decisions on my entire list was the Macy Graves, Amber Cottrell situation, but I did go Macy Graves. So on the first team there, Bruce, it would be Collins, Fisher, Basie, Coleman, and Graves. And then in the second list, you've heard me mention some of these kids. I've already talked to Amber. Amber Cottrell is the best man-to-man defender we have in our league. Leads the league, I believe, in assist, and then gets it done on the defensive end with her steals and charges and so forth. And we have some great defenders. She's a different type of defender than Collins. Collins is more of a long, lanky, get your deflection, like your steals. Amber's more of that lockdown, man-to-man technique defender, I guess is what I'm saying, John, in terms of mm-hmm. to clarify the difference there. And what separates her from some outstanding defenders, say like a McFadden or a Stanforth or like a Henry or whatnot, is how much she can do it without fouling. The ability to stay out of foul trouble because of her IQ and her ability to understand positioning and so forth. And then she's really started to add the three-point shot here the second half of the year as well. Marcy Dudgeon's a kid. Man, she has two talented teammates, and it was really hard to sort within Westfall. There's going to be a lot of people out there that may not have her as the first Westfall kid. And if that's the case, I mean, I that's your opinion. I can't argue with you. I'm just giving you an opposing coach view of it, of how Marcy still remained at the top of the scouting report. So, John, you'll know this as a coach. What happens is a domino effect. If you start your defensive matchup there, okay, now who guards this person? Well, who guards this person? Who guards this person? And before you know it, you get yourself in some favorable matchups. I know in what I thought was the most pivotal game of Westfall's entire season. Gosh, I don't have that in front of me. Their first Piketon game, she was big time in that game. I think shot like 20 free throws or whatever. Just took the game over from what I was told from several people. And I really, really thought that was the game that flipped Westfall's entire season. I just think she's really good. She also does a lot with rebounding and defensively, and has really improved her overall game. But man, when she gets going north south off the dribble, she's a handful. She can really make it tough to defend her because of foul trouble and so forth that she can cause. And then Grace Lytle, you know, this is the one that might be a little low if we're going back to the career as well. A lot of the respect I have here is going to go into the situation of the respect for her team, John, in terms of some of the other kids. But, man, Grace is a kid that, gosh, I'd have to ask Coach Carino. He told me earlier in the year, I would imagine she's up over 900 points. I don't know that she'll quite get to 1,000, but she's certainly up there. Really, really good player. Again, the scouting report starts with her. If she pushed up to the bottom first team, I certainly wouldn't have a problem with it. I just have some guards up there on teams that were a little bit more successful ahead. And then I went with Graves basically because I felt like there's a little bit more depth maybe with the Westfall and Piketon lineups. But, man, Grace is terrific, really, really good player. And then in my ninth spot, I guess – well, right here is my case in point, is I have Allie Crothers. That's probably a little higher than some people would have her. But, John, you know, I said earlier in the year how much I thought she'd improved and what she brings to the table, double-double. She's in the top 10 of assists. She's guarding well. She's getting steals. She's an improved shooter. You know, she made two or three moves against us. You know, we didn't have an answer for in terms of just her ability to score. So, to me, she's a top 10 kid. And then at the bottom of third team, I'm going to go right back to the champions, Eric Cree Stawley. I get questions a lot about Cree Stawley's numbers and, you know, production and so forth, but there's one ball to go around. And you got kids shooting 74% down on the block. And then you've got, you know, two guards that are as skilled as Coleman and Cottrell. I think Stawley just kind of stays within herself, plays her role. I think, you know, like you said yesterday, made the big play and so forth. But I think with some of these kids, sometimes you look beyond the stat sheet and you just evaluate it. And that's the way I feel. So the way you had me do it there, Bruce, with Collins, Fisher, Basie, Coleman, Graves on the first team, right, which moves Cottrell, Dudgeon, Lytle, Crothers, and Stawley. And again, I think if people had Graves through Lytle in a little bit of a different order there, I certainly couldn't argue with them.
All right. So that's the first and second team.
That's where we're at there.
Okay. We, on SVC Sports Talk, we go into our third team, and you kind of also meld this in a little bit with honorable mention, I'm thinking as well, don't you, Shane?
I think that makes the most sense, guys, because obviously, once you get to the bottom of third team, you're debating other kids, and that's where your honorable mentions come from. Right. Or at least that's how I do it. I look, and, you know, honorable mentions for me are kids that are totally on. I started the list with somewhere around 22, 23 names, and obviously you only get 15 of them. So, to me, the two kids that have to start the list without a doubt certainly could be second team. And again, depending on how you rank Piketon and Westfall players, we might even be talking, John, about one kid that's up close to the 5, 6, 7 spot. Mm-hmm. And that's Mahaley Farmer. Farmer's terrific. I mean, she's really good. So again, depending on how you rank Westfall on your list, maybe you have something complete. You might have Farmer in a 6, 7 spots higher. And if you do, again, I can't argue with that because, again, Westfall's really, really talented, especially on the offensive end. This is a kid that rebounds it. She passes it, an improved defender the second half of the year. And right there at the top with her, you have to get the Adina kid. Now, here's what kept Adina off the second team on my list, John, is I think I'm only going to have room for one Adina kid, and you're going to run into the debate of Stark being more of that top of the scouting report, been the consistent factor with the emergence of Smith. Don't you see this all the time with teams? You know what I mean? And so what happens is you sit there and debate. I'm going to go Hannah Stark just out of respect to what she's done throughout this entire process and how, again, Stark is the name at the top of the scouting report. But I'll say this. I've watched Smith play in person two times here in the last 2-3 weeks of the season. She averaged 20 points a game and hit like a combined 7 threes in those two games. So she's really, really good. But I'm going to go with Stark on third team. I'm going to bump Smith down to the honorable mention list. So far we have Farmer and Stark there at the top. Then, as I said, I had trouble with Westfall on how to order those. You come right in behind with Mullins now of Westfall. 50-some three-pointers on the year. Yeah. Just nuts. I mean, her ability to shoot it, she has some size. And again, what happens, I think we have to be fair, the same way we say with Fisher in the post, what happens is the reason she gets those is the ability of Dudgeon and the ability of Farmer and the way you struggle to match up with this team. So she is certainly a top 15 player, in my opinion. Then the last two get really, really hard because you start to ask yourself, okay, am I looking for the 15 kids that were producing by a number? Okay, kind of like, you know, it was no-brainer for me to go with Cree Stolle earlier. I think you could really argue here Riley Blackberry and Odell. You know, I know Riley Black does not have all league numbers, but I guess I would argue this, John, and this will be something that maybe in your final question I'll ask you, you'll clarify for us a little bit. But sometimes I think what happens is when you look at a team that's 12-2, they obviously proved they were a lot better than everyone in that 3-7 mix, right? I mean, they only got challenged after Uniota. They only really got challenged a handful of times into the fourth quarter. And I think Riley had a lot to do with that, her ability to rebound, her ability to bang in the post and box out and do a lot of those little things. Same way with Odell, another senior, physical guard, shoots it, probably averages about 9 points, you know, can pass it well, can shoot it well, can defend. And a lot of times what happens if you don't see some of these kids in the top 10 of our stats, if you're distracted, the stats out the way I have the privilege of seeing sometimes, they show up 11 through 15 in a lot of categories. So if I were to go with Black and Odell at the end, by far, without question, my number one snub would be Sydney Huff. Now, she averages just under 10 a game. So if you were to put Huff in there, I certainly could not argue that. I think that's extremely fair. I also – when I was looking at like Halbaugh and Hershare from Huntington, that's when I kind of pulled Black. I bumped them down. I even thought about, you know, Pinkerton throughout the list. I started with her because, again, you're talking five starters on a team that was like 30 points better than the rest of the league. Gabby Petit of Westfall is there. Certainly didn't forget about Zane Trace. I started with Lauren Lane and some kids there. So that's where I was, guys. If I go Stark, Farmer, Mullins, Black, and Odell, I'm the first to admit that Huff's probably my biggest snub there. It'll be interesting to see what the real vote does in terms of how they handle that at the bottom, because I guess that's where you really get into some different philosophies. And I guess, John, my question for you, this is always a long process, and next week I'm excited to see you do the boys and kind of flip the script on me. I want the fans to know John is hearing the teams for the first time, correct? John, we didn't talk about this at all. You had no idea. So, John, my question for you is, I do this so much every year, all year. I'm constantly evaluating. I'm constantly ranking. What would you take, just hearing it for the first time as a summary of sorts on my selection? In other words, what would you think when you hear my list that, oh, Shane must value these points? Or how would you summarize some of those things for just the start of discussion here?
Well, I think winning is valued, which, I mean, is obvious because, I mean, with a player like Cree Stolle, like you said, with the numbers may not be there, but the actual skill and talent is. And I think you'll see that more next year when she will be higher up on the, trying to get her the ball a little bit more. And obviously point guard bias, obviously.
ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and, you know, we both value defense. We both value winning. We both value ball handlers and you know, maybe as coaches, we both can kind of look past the stat sheet on a couple things. I really like you putting Macy Graves on top of the, or on first team, just based on her skill set. The Westfall kids, I think the fact that there are, and they're good.
And they're hard. They're hard to decipher from too. I mean,
yeah, because like you'll see, like it looked like Mahaley Farber was maybe, you know, maybe a closer game away from a quadruple double yesterday. Mm-hmm. I mean, with a kid like that, and then Marcy Dudgeon will have huge games, and Mullins is shooting the lights out. I mean, it's hard to do. And I think if you're not constantly looking at it throughout the season, it can be even harder because you might look at recency bias on a couple players. Kind of how like you deciphered between Stark and Smith for Adina. Because I mean, it could be, you could look at who was playing, you know, maybe not better, but like standing out a little bit more at the end of the year as opposed to throughout the year. So
I think that's a really fair point, because Stark and Dudgeon for me are very similar in their teams, whereas Smith and then with Farmer and Mullins, because I think what gets lost in the evaluation of Westfall is Mullins. I mean, you know what I mean? Kids with her height that hit like, you know, 56 threes or whatever on the year, that's unreal. Like, you know what I mean? Like I don't have the stats in front of me. If I pull them up here, didn't she hit like 50 some threes and the next closest kid wasn't even a 40 or something like that? I mean, it's unreal. And what that does to space the floor, I mean, there's a reason that you can't help on Dudgeon and Farmer, right? I mean, because if you do, there's this kid out, with the feet set to hit 56 three. Yeah, 37 was the second place 3-point shooter in the league. I mean, so, I mean, you're going to tell me 56 3-pointers isn't going to make all league? And I'm not saying she did or didn't on the all league. I'm just saying she made mine. I mean, you know, that's good stuff. So I think you're really fair in that evaluation, because I think Stark and Dudgeon do kind of parallel. Anything else, John? I don't want to cut you off there. I mean, I love this, and I look forward to doing it with you next week. John's going to name his boys, and he's going to have some follow-up questions to me as well. So anything else you want to add there?
No, I thought it was pretty good. I wish I could disagree more. Because I think that makes the show better. But
yes,
I think
Bruce is wearing off on you. You're allowed to just say, Shane, that's just flat genius. That's a good list.
It's really good list. And I'm going to throw this out there. I know nothing about the current list. I'll say it might end up being better. Obviously I don't know anything, but I might agree with you more than I agree with the coaches. We'll see.
Well, and you do have to remember this, in fairness to the coaches, is obviously we said at the beginning, or at least I hope, and again, I'm being biased, I would hope there's two Paint Valley kids on that list. So two more kids coming off my list. So that's a factor as well. Sure.
Good stuff there, Shane. Well thought out, well presented, and I know you enjoyed doing this, and it's kind of something that you really start to be – well – very beginning of the year, if not a little earlier, knowing the players and so forth. Not too many people could do that. Well, guys, our Coach's Corner continues to be a popular segment, and this week we've got an email that's asking us about player development. We get to the last segment here of SVC Sports Talk, and I want to dispel a rumor. I did not play cowbell on that.
I have to drop in with some nonsense that no one else cares about. But my first A I got in college was because I wrote a extra credit paper on the history of cowbell and music, and my music history professor thought it was the funniest thing ever, and I got bumped from like a high B to a low A. First A ever was thanks to thanks to, you know, the More Cowbell sketch from Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, that is a classic. That is a classic. But I did not play on that one. I was up for the part, but I didn't get it. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. We digress. I should tell you that this segment, as we end our show, brought to you again by North Fork Animal Clinic, Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday 9 to 12, and they have the doggy daycare resort hours out there, 7 to 7 on Monday through Friday, Saturday 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Give them a call, 740-773-7387, 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe. Guys, here's our Coach's Corner. This is becoming a pretty well-liked segment of the program here. It deals this time with an email that we received. It says, I have some great debates with some basketball friends about a particular topic, so we decided to turn it over to SVC Sports Talk. Just think of that, guys. They hold you in high esteem. That's pretty amazing. The topic is player development, the player versus the coach. Here's the meat and potatoes of this. Where do you draw the line for where the coach is responsible for teaching and the player is responsible for getting better? Shane?
This is a loaded question. Yeah, yeah. And this is a time period question. And I would love to know how old the people in the email are. Okay. Because I think there's been a huge change, a paradigm shift here in terms of when I first started, especially when I played, to when I first started coaching till now. When I start to break some of this stuff down, player development, player versus the coach. Well, first of all, I don't know if those two should be on opposite sides.
It almost sounds adversarial, doesn't it?
Yeah. Where do you draw the line, and where's the coach responsible for teaching, the player responsible for getting better? When I was growing up, John, it was back in the day where you couldn't really do a lot in the summer with your team. Okay, so the way you got better is you went out on the driveway and you played, or you went to camps. Okay, so mm-hmm. we were allowed about 15 camp days back then. So a lot of times you go to your local camp, you go to another one, you maybe even go to college. I went down to OU a lot or whatever, and I can remember every camp you ever go to, there's always that lecture about how we can't make you better in 5 days. We can show you how to get better. And then you have to go out and do it. And I think that's something that just kind of really grew with my age group, and it started to come up through. Well, then about the time I graduated and I got into coaching, now all of a sudden we're starting to go into more team camps and we're allowed to travel together and basketball season kind of extends and you're doing a lot more. So I think what's happened is you started to look at developing a particular type of player. You no longer were developing the full player like they were in camps. You know what I mean? Like the coaching staff at Ryo's camp or at OU's camp or whatever camp, they're not worried about your role you're playing. They're trying to develop you as the full player. Well, I think what happened was we started to get more role specific. We had scoreboard on in the summer. You want to win. Hey, you know, that's not a shot I want you to take, or that's not, you know, something off the dribble you should be doing, or so forth. And I think it started to have this shift. So here's where I would comment on this. I think what happens is I think the coach's responsibility in today's workout time is you have to have very clear goals in terms of one or two things you really want to see a player add to his or her game in an off season. And then you have to try to provide them the opportunities to get better. And then you have to serve a little bit as a motivational source of pushing them. And you have to almost serve as a little bit as accountability partner. Now it's like anything else, a kid that's motivated that goes out and gets their shots up, goes out and does their ball handling, goes and does their weightlifting, and so forth, are obviously going to be the better people. You know, we talked about this in the fall with the Paint Valley football kids in the weight room. No one has to tell them to get the weight room. You know, they do it themselves. You know, you'll get kids that just organize like passing drills out in someone's backyard, you know, and mm-hmm. and they'll run them, you know, 2 days a week. You'll get situations. I heard the Uniota girls basketball stories and talking to Coach Miller and some of his staff about how they've really committed to the weight room, getting stronger, getting different things. So again, I think it's the coach's job to present the challenges, to provide the resources, and at times go into as a little bit of accountability partner. But at the end of the day, you know, the kid's only going to get better with his or her left hand if they go out and put the ball in his or her left hand. Mm-hmm. They're only going to get – I still to this day, I just named some of them on all league teams, have no idea how some of these kids play as much basketball as they do, yet they can't shoot over 55% from the free throw line. That absolutely blows my mind. You know what I mean? Like, but that's a fact. So that tells you that, okay, they're playing a lot of basketball. Evidently, they're not shooting a lot of free throws. They're not doing a lot of ball handling. They're not doing a lot of these things. So I guess, John, that's where I come from. To answer the question detailed, it is the line comes from the coach has to be the basketball mind that presents the challenge and writes out the plan, has to give resources and guidance, maybe even a little bit motivational and accountability. But the player at the end of the day has to be the one that puts in the work to get better if it means enough to them.
I wish I could disagree. There's not, like, I don't see anything to disagree with on this. Because the coach has to have the plan. Like, if the player says, hey, this is what I want to work on, the coach should be able to put the plan together. But the player still has to put in the time to do it, because you can't make a kid go do it. That's just all it comes down to, is you have to give them the resources. You have to give them time to be able to, you know, to use the resources, and to have a plan. But really, after that, it's up to the player. You have to put in the extra work. You have to shoot 500 free throws a week or a day, whatever. You have to work on your right and left hand, whichever one's your weak hand. You have to, you know, you can do those things on your own. Now, certain shooting things, you probably do need the coaches to be around. But obviously, we have multiple dead periods where coaches can't be involved.
Right.
So, you know, in those times, that's when players really need to spend their own time. Now, we can, you know, the weight room can be open. You know, players can go in and do it. And it's great to hear that, you know, like the Payne Valley football players, the Unio girls basketball players. I know I have players on my JV team that go out and they run routes, you know, getting ready for football season. So, you know, that's like they'll go after practice and run routes. And that's not anything football organized. That's something they wanted to do. So, I mean, it's. It does come down to the kids. I know before last season, like, you know, how the Chillicothe kids are really good right now in basketball. Well, all those kids would be at our open gyms. This summer, the Udiota kids, when the gym was closed, would organize and go to different open gyms. Like, they'd go out to Adena. Right. So, I mean, really, when our kids were playing Adena on – Friday night is really like the 10th or 12th time they've played each other in the last right. 8 months. So, right. I mean, it's just, you know, these kids know each other so well because of that, but that's how you get better as a player. The coach has to do what they can, but there's only so much that you can do. And you know, it's, you can definitely tell the ones that do put in the extra amount of work, but then you also have the kids that do other sports,
right.
You know, it's just it, and sometimes kids just want to be kids. So, I mean, that's, right. It's, you know,
Shane, do you, are you kind of hinted at it, but I thought you were going a different way when you started setting up this response. Do you think this has changed in expectation? I mean, is the person that's sending this in, I don't know who that is, but could they be saying, you know, it used to be that the player was more responsible for their own development. Now we feel like society or the expectation is that the coaches got to develop that player more, getting away from personal accountability or something like that. Do you think it's changed over time, or has it always been that way, that the coach sets up the infrastructure and the player executes?
Yeah, I think it's certainly changed, because I think it's certainly changed from the start of my career till now. And I think when I say career, I think it's in coaching and teaching. Yeah. I think I'll hear friends of mine who are parents say, hey, their coach doesn't open up the gym. They don't believe in giving the sixth graders or the junior high kids a chance to go get better. And I'm thinking, well, it's 80 degrees outside. There's a basketball right there. Go dribble. I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? The instinct is, in terms of the way we have open gyms and camps and workouts and different things, what's the coach – like the coach literally almost has to take a June-July calendar and I mean, several days, several hours really diagram. Hey, here's the opportunity for this age group to get better and to do this and to do that. And that's the expectation at a lot of schools. Mm-hmm. Same way in the classroom. When I first started – I would prepare my lessons. My accountability with my boss was, I want you to teach the standards. I want you to go in and have a great lesson. I want you to go in and teach with passion. I want you up around the room working hard for the kid. And at the end of the day, they got to buy what you're selling. You know what I mean? If they're not doing the work, then we'll punish them properly, or we'll grade them properly, and we'll try to motivate them to get their parents involved. Where now, the state, the culture of education is really kind of changed. Now it's more they'll come back to the teacher, be like, okay, what intervention are you going to use? What plan are you going to use? And, you know, you can say whatever you want about it as a teacher. It's just the day and age we live in. You know, they're going to come back to you. You got to understand that if a kid's not making a test score in your class, or if they're not doing something in class, they're going to come back and ask you why. And they're going to say, okay, what plan are you going to put in place? What intervention are you going to do differently with this kid? Okay, now over here, what intervention are you going to do with this kid? And that's just where we're at. So I do think the teacher and the coach have a little bit more on them.
Yeah.
But I think that's just the kind of the culture we live in, because what our culture has done, I think we talked about this in Little League a little bit. What our culture has done is it does give the high achieving kid an opportunity to push forward if he or she chooses. But it also makes it very, very difficult for adults to hold some of our lazier kids accountable, if that makes sense. I'm not talking about the kids that are struggling to get it, that are working hard, because you'd work hard with those kids all day long. I'm talking about the typical, you know, middle school kid in the classroom that I just didn't do my homework last night because I was on stage 11 and I was awesome. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and that's what I'm talking about there. So that's the difficulty of balancing that. So I hope that answers your follow up, Bruce, because I thought your follow up standing. I think that's the difference I see is the questioning of the coach and the player, and that's the first thing that came to my mind when I read this email. So I agree with you there.
Yeah, that's what kind of I think the grumpy old man in me starts when I see something like this. I start thinking, well, back in the day, and I think there was a more expectation of the player. Now I think society expects the coach to somehow pull a rabbit out of his hat, and it's just not going to happen if the player is not engaged and not attempting to get better. So I could go on, but I in the interest of time and everyone's bored of mine, will shut up. So, but I will tell you that you know, we enjoy this kind of input from our listening audience, and if you would like to provide said input, you may do so for Shane. You can contact him via email at admin1@svcsportszone.com. John's email address is jbruce1018@yahoo.com. They're both on Twitter. Shane can be found using the hash, or using the handle rather, SVC Sports Zone. And John, and we still got to get this story somehow, has the handle @coconutwallpapa. And they're both using #SVCSportsTalk when they get an opportunity out there. Shane also maintains two profiles on Facebook, Shane Combs SVC Sports Zone and SVCSportsZone.com. And we want to mention that Derek, who has been a busy little beaver here recently, I've seen several different things out that he's put out. He can be reached on the verified account of Twitter at DW1509, and his email address, DerekW1509@gmail.com. So that wraps up that for you there, Shane.
Yeah, Derek covered the Huntington Portsmouth Clay game last night. That's up on his Derek webpage, and enjoyed my visit with him last night. And nice pictures up on the website there, and it was good to catch up with him. And he said, I'll see him on the tournament trail here with a lot of Portsmouth and SVC SEC areas cross matchups. So, guys, really look forward to a great week. Girls get into tournament play. The guys are going to finish up a really excited finish with Huntington Adina, and then Adina Zane Trace. And that, then we'll be talking tournament next week. So next week's going to be our last basketball show, and then we'll take some time off before spring. But really, really enjoying it. Appreciate all the feedback. So fans, let us know what you think. And again, next week, John will talk boys basketball league with us, and I'll kind of follow up and give my two cents as well. So guys, until then, that next time for Triple Crown Family Fun Center and all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes and at DBK Media Services, and for John Bruce, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.